Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Hi, this is Maya Bialik, and you're listening to TV Confidential.
To see you smile today when you heard that my big son was there is very special. This is the second longest running the situational comedy on television. I want to salute you on this day. Because this show is part of Americana. And you think about, you know, see the USA and the Chevrolet in that time period. It was a wonderful time period in a sense, but also the challenging time period is the birth of the Civil Rights Movement and the extension and all the tragedies of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Bobby Kennedy, along that, and then through 1972, the time that you lived. Was so important as a television show. So I wanted to, on behalf of the great people of the city of Los Angeles, honor Mike Lisa on this very special occasion.
Ed Robertson, author, guest Barry Livingston. Barry's book, The Importance of Being Ernie, is the story of his life and career before, during, and after My Three Sons, and is filled with great stories not only about My Three Sons, but about Barry's encounters with the likes of Myrna Loy, Carl Malden, John Cassavetes, Elvis Presley, Robert Downey Jr., Lucille Ball, David Janssen, Forest Whitaker, and Adam Sandler. You can find The Importance of Being Ernie in bookstores everywhere, as well as Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and The Importance of Being Ernie.com. My Three Sons plays every day on MeTV. As going back to Paul Newman, the work mattered to him. I understand there's some actors, they only do their lines, and if it doesn't have to do with them, they sit in their trailer. While there are others like Newman who would either read lines to you off camera, or in the case of what happened to you, early on in your career, he would come to your rescue.
Well, you know, you're probably referring to the very, very first job I ever had, where I was hired to play his son in a film called Rally Round the Flag Boys. And it was during that shooting of that film that I was shooting a scene, in fact, where I wasn't wearing glasses. I wasn't wearing them in real life at that time. And there was a moment where the director said, okay, you sit on the sofa. I want you to just watch the TV. And when Paul Newman, who's playing your dad, comes in the front door, totally ignore him. No matter what he does, no matter what he says, you just stare at the TV. Well, they tried to do that once, twice. Every time they'd get into the scene, the director would yell, cut, Barry, you're not looking at the TV. Come on, focus. Get it together here, kid, you know. And anyway, they did that 10 times, you know. Now the directors keep getting more and more frustrated with me because he thinks I'm being unprofessional and looking around the room instead of pretending to just watch a television. And Paul Newman, who just kind of, was an up-and-coming star at that point. This is probably 1957, 58. Yeah. He had just burst onto the scene a few years before that. But still, he had enough clout to tell the director to settle down. It's just a kid. Let me handle this, you know. Somebody give me a puppet. Let's shoot it from another angle. I'll get inside the TV. It was one of those big old boxy old television box sets, but there was no real TV in it. Mm-hmm. He climbed in it, and he said, I'll give the kid something to look at, you know, somebody give him his hand puppet. So he kind of wedged, squeezed his way in, and, you know, they tried to shoot it again, and unfortunately, still, the director was not satisfied. He said, you know, you're still not doing it. And then somebody said, something could be happening here, you know, maybe he's having a seizure or something. So they took me from the set, literally, to a hospital. And then I was diagnosed with having an eye problem. I had an astigmatism, and they prescribed glasses. So when I came back to the set 2 days, whatever it was, a couple days later, and the producer looked at me and he said, we didn't hire this kid, with glasses. Paul Newman's son, we don't think he would be wearing glasses. So I was fired right then and there. They said, you know, this is one of those things. That's not how we saw him. That's not how we hired him. And if he has to wear glasses, then he's got to go. So I was right then and there asked to depart. And that, oddly enough, the glasses then went on to become part of my signature look. And, you know, that's how life works sometimes.
That's how life works sometimes. But if I remember correctly, Barry, you may have been fired once you had to wear glasses, but you still made the final cut of the film, kind of, sort of.
Well, yeah, kind of, sort of. That is still my official movie debut, because they did use, they left one scene in from the movie using me, where I'm upside down and Joan Woodward has me by my feet because I apparently swallowed some coins, and she's kind of tapping my head onto the carpet and had a phone tucked under one hand and me, you know, upside down. So they used that because they thought, you know, they can't tell. Nobody's going to know it's a different kid in the rest of the movie. It was some other kid they hired to replace me. But, yeah, that's me, upside down.
Upside down, right side up. It's Barry Levinson that we're talking to this hour. Barry's book, The Importance of Being Ernie, is available in bookstores everywhere, as well as Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and TheImportanceOfBeingErnie.com. You don't have to be a My Three Sons fan, folks, to enjoy Barry's book, although there are a lot of My Three Sons fans who listen to our program. But you don't necessarily have to be a My Three Sons fan, because, you know, My Three Sons is just one part of Barry's life. Barry's book really is a story of hard work and talent and persistence that will appeal to you if you're a working actor, if you're a working writer, if you're an entrepreneur, or if you're someone who has a long-term goal that you want to achieve.
And or even if you're out of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is what my book talks about quite a bit.
That's right.
How I dealt with being out of work. So yeah,
that's right. Well, that you just set up my next question. One thing I like about your story is that it shows that if you have talent, you know, it will carry you through the valleys, the out of work periods, and when the opportunity presents itself, you'll know what to do. And that's basically what happened to you when you had the opportunity to audition in New York for Skin of Our Teeth.
Yeah, well, I'd always been a fan of the theater, and had a great love of the classic American stage and film star John Barrymore, and so I was quite fixated on that. I read a book kind of young, when I was young, a great book called Good Night, Sweet Prince, mm-hmm. which is the life and times of John Barrymore, but it was a lot about his shenanigans. He was a wild man, kind of the rock star of his era, but he was perhaps maybe the greatest American Hamlet, certainly in his era.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, I had that bug, you know, inside of me that one of these days I would get on stage. So this was mid-70s, and My Three Sons had wrapped, and I was working here in town. I've done did another television series called Sons and Daughters, a bunch of television movies and episodics, but I, you know, I said, now's the time. I'm going to go to New York. In fact, I worked with Roddy McDowell on a TV movie called The Elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And Roddy McDowell was a tremendously successful child star in the 30s and 40s at MGM. But he was an adult now, and I decided, well, how did you do it? And he said, well, you know, I went to New York, and I tried to get away from Hollywood and figure out who I was and develop my talent as an actor. And he said, that's what I should do. So I said, yeah, well, that's kind of fit in with my plan anyway of getting to the stage. So I literally, I went to New York. I had an uncle who was longtime resident there, and I was going to make plans to set up a shop in New York. And I met with an agent and said, you know, I'm going to be coming back in a couple weeks, but you know, I wanted to get the ball rolling here. And he said, well, you can go in an audition today. I got something I can send you on. I was like, oh, well, oh, okay. I wasn't really, you know, thinking that, but sure, you know, let's do it. And I went to meet with the great Jose Quintero, mm-hmm. who was preeminent director on Broadway at that time, very instrumental in creating the off-Broadway movement and bringing Eugene O'Neill back into the spotlight as one of the great American playwrights. So, you know, he was a legend in New York. So I went, you know, prepared to read for The Skin of Our Teeth, which was the play he was going to be directing, a huge production that was going to be opening at Kennedy Center, and it was the first of the big bicentennial celebration productions. And I went in, you know, going, well, you know, here we go. I don't know what this will be like. I'll give it my best shot. I knew what I was going to read. Went, got the play, read it real fast before I went in, and we just sat and talked. That's how he auditions actors. He just likes to sit, get a sense of who you are, we had about a 5-10 minute conversation and didn't read, you know, didn't audition in the traditional sense of, you know, picking up the script and showing him how I would do the character. And I thought, well, you know, left gun, I guess I blew it. I don't know. That's not how they do it in Hollywood. He didn't even ask me to read. But, you know, when I got back to my uncle's apartment, lo and behold, there's the answering machine blinking red, you know, pick me up. And then there was the message from the agent saying, you got the part. You're booked and they want to use you. And that was my very first really official entrance into the stage. I kind of studied some great stage directors in Hollywood, but that was my entry into the world of theater and met some great people. The big star was Elizabeth Ashley, mm-hmm. who was really, really super hot at that point in her career on Broadway. She had just done Cat on a Hot Tin Roof and some other big, big plays and, you know, was all the rage. And then Alfred Drake, who was the preeminent musical star of his era, did Oklahoma and Kismet, and Martha Scott, who was the original Emily in Our Town, was in this production. And then Steve Railsback, who was an up-and-coming actor in New York at that time, was also playing one of the leads. So, yeah, it was a wonderful experience. What a great way to jump into the theater.
You mentioned Steve Railsback. You not only work with Steve in Skin of Our Teeth, but you became lifelong friends with Steve, I understand.
Yeah, well, Steve, probably to your listeners, would be best remembered as playing Charles Manson in the original miniseries on TV, Helter Skelter. Mm-hmm. And he was just an amazing performance and made his career, and he went on to work in a lot of other films and television after that. But at the point we worked together in New York and Broadway, he was pretty well known in New York as a stage actor, and became, you know, just a great friend, just a terrific friend. I admired his talent. He knew everybody in New York at that time, and this was, like I say, the mid-70s, so he was a member of the Actors Studio, and I was privileged to, you know, accompany him to many a studio event where I met Elia Kazan and all of the young hot guns that became famous, you know, 5, 10, 15 years later, Mickey Rourke and Treat Williams and James Woods and Harvey Keitel. You know, there was just a whole group of crop of actors that were just starting to become recognized. So it was a very exciting time, and it was all through Steve.
You mentioned the Actors Studio. Now, that's, if you watch James Lipton, folks, you know that is one of the places where the method came to fore. And, you know, and you talk about this a little bit in the importance of being Ernie Barry. I mean, people think of the method as one thing, but there are actually some different variations of it. And if I follow you correctly, you don't consider yourself a method actor per se, but there are various aspects of the method that you have found useful in your life.
Well, I mean, yeah, like you say, there's different interpretations of Stanislavski, who that's the foundation of method acting, is mm-hmm. based on some of his teachings. But it got very bent in the original thrust of some of his books that he wrote by Lee Strasberg, who had his own version of the method. Mm-hmm. But then there were a few other key players that came out of that era that created the Actors Studio: Cheryl Crawford, Stella Adler, you know, and they all have their interpretation of what is the method that was defined by Stanislavski. So yeah, I mean, I've it's just a craft. Eventually, you just stand in front of another person. You're pretending to be a character in a certain circumstance, and you look that other person in the eye and listen to what they have to say, and you answer back with the lines that were written for you. You know, and Spencer Tracy probably said it best. That's pretty much acting. It's telling the truth, you know, planting your feet, looking the other person in the eye, and just tell the truth. And as the truth is, the character knows it. So, yeah, you know, I mean, I was exposed to, you know, a lot of the different styles of acting. Harold Clurman was another big influence in the studio, and I studied with him a little bit, and I studied with Martin Landau for a couple of years. And so I was certainly exposed to the principles, and every actor, you know, I didn't memorize everything that came out of everyone's mouth, so, you know, I took what seemed to work for me and use it today.
We're talking to Barry Livingston. Barry's book, The Importance of Being Ernie, is the story of his 50-year journey in show business, and Barry is still going strong today. You can find The Importance of Being Ernie in bookstores everywhere, as well as Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and The Importance of Being Ernie. Landau.com. You mentioned you studied with Martin Landau for a while in the 70s. You also worked with Martin Landau for a while on a series of plays with John Cassavetes. What was it like to work with Cassavetes?
You know, well, there was a guy who had his own method, you know. I think, again, he was somebody that came out of the golden era of the Actor's Studio in New York, which was probably the 50s, 40s, 50s. By the time of the 60s, he was becoming an auteur of his own, and, you know, but he was a very eccentric, fun-loving, pedal-to-the-metal kind of guy. He just lived his life in the full pursuit of just creating art and creating film and creating stage plays and working with actors, and just, you know, that was just something that consumed him. And he was very generous, you know, in his time and including people, and you know, he didn't have even if you were just somebody who had 20 years of acting experience or 2 days of acting experience, it didn't matter to him. If he liked you and he saw something in you, and he would give you a chance. And he was very, very kind to me, you know, just to allow me to be in some of his plays, and it was thrilling, you know, to get to see somebody who likes to work on a tightrope, and that's how John is. He would, take some crazy chances, and really wouldn't think things through. That was really taking, you know, the biggest chances. Just he had the whim to do a scene a certain way, and it may have seemed ass backwards to everybody but John, but, you know, you'd do it, and then you'd find out, well, I guess it worked. It was great, you know. He was terrifically talented, and what a joy, you know, what a privilege.
You worked with Cassavetes at the time he was doing what was known as the Love and Hate trilogy. You mentioned in The Importance of Being Ernie that Peter Falk was in one of those three plays. Did you work with Falk when he worked with Cassavetes?
Well, only in that I was around. To be in these plays, that was one of the requirements. If you wanted to act on stage, you had to contribute as like a rep company in either, you know, construction of sets or you know, sweeping up or selling tickets or whatever. So I actually wasn't in the play that Peter Falk was in. He was in a one that something John wrote called Knives.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a play called The Third Day Comes, and there was another play, Love Streams, that actually were written by a guy named Ted Allen.
Mm-hmm.
But John was directing those. And Love Street with John Voight was in the stage production, and Jenna, his wife, Jenna Rollins, and Nick Cassavetes was young Nick Cassavetes was in all of them. But I loved Peter Falk. He was, again, the epitome of a character actor. You didn't get any better than Peter Falk, and he was one of John's great friends.
I would imagine it would have been fun to watch Falk and Cassavetes working together, because, as you say, Cassavetes' method was not for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And while Falk was known for doing take after take after take after take, which as an actor, you know, is good, but, you know, for some of the production people, it's like, okay, we just want to move on. So I would imagine that would have been interesting to observe.
Well, again, they had a shorthand, you know, because they were close friends and drinking buddies, and, you know, they would work together on the professional level, you know, of a director who's trying to get something, a performance out of an actor. And, you know, and sometimes Falk would get frustrated that he would be getting directions that he, you know, either he'd try the suggestion and he thought he'd nail it, but John didn't, and they'd go back and forth. And so there was a lot of, you know, a lot of banter that only comes from familiarity between guys, and sometimes some heated arguments about things too. But that was the way they worked. And of course, Jenna, his wife, who was in all three plays, you don't get any more intimate than a husband and wife acting, directing. You know, that's a real interesting dynamic, because a director really is the god figure on a set. He's all important, and, you know, his word is gospel. And so that sometimes crosses the line, maybe, you know, if you're directing your wife, who doesn't particularly care for your directions and has a you know, another relationship with you other than just director actor.
Yeah.
You know, that might, wife and husband has some pretty intense emotional dynamics. So, yeah, you know, it was interesting to watch all of that. It was terrific.
We'll take a quick time out, then we'll continue our conversation with Barry here on TV Confidential. Be part of our conversation. If you like what you hear, have thoughts on this week's program, or have an idea for a future edition of TV Confidential, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at talk@tvconfidential.net, talk@tvconfidential.net. You can also message us at facebook.com/TV Confidential, x.com/TV Confidential, or at TV Confidential on Instagram. And if you're listening to us on the TV Confidential podcast, please be sure to hit the subscribe button.
This portion of TV Confidential is brought to us by our friends at Front Porch Realty, the community of realtors in the Northern Bay area of California that is committed to finding the solution that is best for their clients. Whether you're a first-time home buyer or looking to sell or lease your property in Northern California, call Karen Strain at 415-886-7411 or visit frontporchrealtygroup.com for more information on how they can help you.